Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Brian Hayes, Gord Miller.
Wait, this is a three-hour show?
Three-hour show.
Oh, no one told me that.
Yeah, you're locked in. We only do 2 hours every once in a while.
When there's soccer.
When there's soccer, and there's no soccer today. And I got to be honest, like, you know, leading up to the World Cup, I'm not Mr. Soccer. I don't profess to be Mr. Soccer. I have a difficult time tracking what's going on in Europe and even MLS to a lesser extent because, in many ways, this show is about the big four sports. It's NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, and we mix in other sports from time to time. But whenever the World Cup comes around, it kind of catches me off guard, even though you know it's coming. Yeah. The promotion is so heavy. But by the time the tournament gets going, I can't get enough.
And you know what I found today? I sat there today at like 10 o'clock this morning, and there's a hole in my day.
Yeah.
I've had soccer on at 10 o'clock in the morning for like the last month.
10 a.m., 2 p.m. for a month. It's great.
And it's awesome because even if you don't care, you can just, you know, if you're not don't care, but if the two teams aren't.
Canada's not in the tournament.
Right.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So you're watching it and you're kind of going, huh. You got it on. You're doing other stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and but you're watching it. I've been to two of them. Like I said, 94, 98. It's the greatest sporting event I've ever been to.
It's incredible. I'm dying to go to one.
Yeah.
Well, in 2026, I plan on being there.
And you won't have to die.
Hopefully
you just,
not.
You can just go.
Hopefully I can just take the TTC down there. Jay's back in action tonight. It was a really cool, emotional night last night at the Rogers Center with Jose Bautista making his return. And to chat about that, among some other things, here is the GM of the Blue Jays, Ross Atkins, back on Overdrive. How you doing, Ross?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. We're doing well. I mean, we're just talking about the World Cup. I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be because you're mid-season, so you got to be all baseball all the time. But do you ever get a chance to check out other sports or what?
Yeah, I mean, of course. You know, I'm a huge sports fan, and I appreciate the competitive spirit of all of them. I can't follow them by any means religiously, but love the intensity of it. And anytime somebody says something hot is going on, I try to turn it to that channel.
Absolutely. And that was the case last night, again, with Bautista in town. And I thought you guys handled it well. Take us through the idea of the video montage before the game. He was out stretching, and there were a fair amount of people already in the park, and you knew he was going to get an ovation whenever he stepped up to the plate. But, I mean, this was something we weren't certain was going to happen, considering he didn't sign with the team until it was Atlanta, and then Atlanta waived him, and eventually the Mets picked him up. But in terms of the plans, were you involved with saluting Bautista last night?
Yeah, you know, I think everything we do, we try to do collaboratively, and you know, ultimately, our communications department led that charge, and Marnie Starkman did an incredible job in thinking through not only what Jose has meant to this organization, but trying to find positive examples and good influences, and included, you know, Jose and his agent in that process as well. So, you know, when I say I'm speaking for the Blue Jays, you know, we just can't say enough about, you know, what he has meant to people, what he has meant to this city, what he's meant to the game, and certainly what he's meant to this organization from an impact standpoint. It doesn't get much better. He's a incredible talent, incredible baseball player. He still is, and love pulling for him.
Obviously, business gets in the way of relationships sometimes, and you guys didn't pick up his option last year. But for the most part, do you feel like the Blue Jays as a whole and Bautista, you guys are on good terms?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I stay in very good touch with his agent, and you know, stayed in contact over the off season and last year. Certainly, Jose was incredible last year with us. I mean, his professionalism, you know, given the situation that we were in and then where he was in his career and our downturn in performance, he handled it exceptionally well. So have a ton of respect for him, and always will, and he will be more than welcomed here. He'll always be celebrated here.
When we look at this team, Ross, you know, at the midway point of the season, what's been the biggest pleasant surprise and what's been the most unpleasant surprise you've seen?
I think our biggest pleasant surprise is just that our farm system continues to get better. We are making strides in every aspect of player development, and not only objectively does our talent pool continue to grow and improve, but I think subjectively what we're learning about our talent in the system, the pitching stories in AAA, Ryan Brucki and Sean Reed Foley and TJ Zoik in AA, we'll be excited to get Nate Pearson back into the fold. That just continues to grow and grow and be indicative of a bright future. In addition to that, I think Sam Gavilio here in the big leagues on the pitching side, Grichuk getting back to the form that we expected, how well Luke Maley has played on the major league side has been exciting. The Granderson contribution has been incredible. Jay Happ has obviously been incredible, but those are maybe the more obvious ones. So from the disappointment standpoint, it's just, we knew in 2015 that we had an older roster and it would be difficult to maintain health and difficult. It's just there's historical evidence there that when you are one of the oldest position player teams in baseball, we're actually playing one of them right now. It's hard to stay healthy. It's hard to keep guys on the field, not for 162, but even for 140. So, we were hopeful to acquire enough depth to, potentially sustain some big blows. But, taking the blow of Troy Tulowitzki in spring training, not having one day of him to date, and then the blow of Josh Donaldson early on in the season, Marcus Stroman early on in the season, that is not having Roberto Osuna on our team. Those are really, really tough to overcome. Those are, arguably our four best players. So that has been the most disheartening.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, I find it interesting you mentioned that you knew back in 2015 that this could be coming. You had a veteran-laden team at that point, and you remain one of the oldest teams in the league, if not the oldest team in the American League. Yet since then, you have contributed to that age with the signings of Morales and Pierce and Granderson. So if you knew that back in 2015, why did you continue to sign and bring in these older guys, quote-unquote?
Well, your alternatives in free agent are only those ages. So the only other alternative would be make big trades, which means subtracting from your youth ultimately, because you're subtracting from your farm system. So to acquire the 25 to 27 year old established major league veteran, you're trading away anywhere from 2 to 4 19 to 21 year olds, right? So there's the give and take. And so you go into free agency, you're not getting younger. We knew that. But our effort to get younger is to build our farm system up, which we have focused on the entire time and will continue to focus on, and not traded away from it greatly at the start. And this is by no means an indictment. I think there was a lot of very, very good things done here, obviously, before we got here, and that's in player development, scouting included. It's not that we came here and had to by any means make corrections. It's just we had to build upon the situation we were in. And what we've tried to do is sustain a winning team without compromising too much of our future. We know we've made our future brighter, and we just weren't able to sustain the winning team in 17. And, in 18, our health it's really hurt us.
Well, in terms of the health, I mean, Donaldson's is the guy that gets the most focus, considering his contractual scenario. We're into June now, and or into July now, I should say. So we're talking about the trade deadline basically on a daily basis here. What can you tell us about the latest on his status and how his injuries this year may affect your approach at the trade deadline?
Yeah, there's kind of, if you just isolate Josh Donaldson, what our focus right now is just how do we help him get back onto our team. Every day that he's here, we're better. It's been difficult for him. It's been difficult for us. And, similar to Jose, I just can't say enough about his professionalism and how he's continued to persevere through it, because dealing with four calf injuries over the span of 2 years has been very, very difficult for him, and it's hurt us a great deal. He knows that, and it's been hard on him. So, you know, how we handle that moving forward is really we just focus on getting them healthy, and then we'll understand what the opportunities are ahead of that.
You know, the trade deadline, the non-waiver deadline is coming up at the end of the month, and you're obviously going to be a team that people are going to look at to make a move. How heated are those discussions right now? How much discussion is happening at this stage?
Yeah, I mean they're always occurring. They began well before the deadline, and that's the case regardless of what your circumstances are. All teams are in constant communication, and every day you're learning more about what the opportunities are to buy, to sell, to just to put yourself in certain categories is not how we like to do business. We like to understand any and all opportunities that we're going to have. And, you know, ultimately, as I've stated, we have started to think this year, the arrow has started to point a little bit more towards the future than the present, as you've seen in the Steve Pierce trade. And we're excited about the acquisition and Espinal. And so we'll work tirelessly to understand where those opportunities are, and we already have a great feel for the market because the conversations, they probably have ticked up a little bit sooner this year, with the gap in the number of teams, certainly in the American League, that are squarely in it. So, but it's, man, it's constant, and, you know, I think any executive in baseball or in sport would tell you that never stops, and it's very fulfilling and gratifying. It's fun work. It's very, very hard work. It takes, I think, to get the best deals done, it takes a very collaborative effort. One of the things that I think is maybe helpful to shed some light on is the hard part of getting a good deal done or even a fair deal that's good for both teams is really knowing the talent for other organizations. So, as you guys know very well, that there's, you know, 8 minor league teams under all 30 of those major league teams. So understanding the 180 times whether you're studying 16 teams harder than the other 14, that's still a massive, massive amount of talent to try to get your arms around. So if you know it, you know, as well or better than others, it just makes you that more agile and able to move when you do have opportunities to acquire talent.
With Ross Atkins, GM of the Jays, it's Jays Mets down at the Rogers Center tonight. The large portion of the focus from our perspective in terms of the conversations and debates over who could get dealt and who could be available, largely veteran guys with contracts that are up, guys like Happ, like Estrada, who got injured last night, like Donaldson. But do you place a limit on that? Or, in other words, if a GM calls up and wants a younger player, Stroman, Sanchez, maybe Grichuk, who's really turned a season around, are you listening on those type of players, or are you only focused on the guys whose deals will be up at the end of the year?
You know, the very broad and easy answer is, you know, it's more challenging to trade players under control. That's the more broad and easy. It's not as defined. It's hard to flush out that market. So typically at the deadline, all teams are more focused on short-term deals, and the quote-unquote rental players or the guys on expiring contracts are, you know, that's where you can get more efficient work done. So you could potentially get bogged down by or change the market even by adding players to that pool. That doesn't mean they don't occur. Obviously, they do. But you have to share that work, and you have to share that work with the other team. So, you know, our energy and effort from day one has been to avoid any significant lulls in performance and, ultimately competitiveness. So, although it's been very frustrating in 17 and 18 and a disappointment that we're not in contention, the silver lining is we've weathered a bit of the storm. And as I've said, our system is a lot better for it. We've moved objectively from, the bottom third and overall talent to the top third. And young, controllable players, as you can see, is what ends up winning World Series, World Championships.
Well, and Aaron Sanchez being one of those guys, and alarm bells going off a couple of weeks ago in Anaheim when he left the game, and listed as a contusion on his finger, but he's missed a couple of starts. The initial hope was he'd only miss one. He's already missed two. And based on my understanding, and you can update us on this, I don't get the impression like he's really even throwing right now. Obviously, because of his blister history, that's why a lot of people are cynical here and wondering what's going on. What can you tell us about the specifics of the injury, and what should we expect out of Sanchez?
100% unrelated to any blister issue. As he stated, it was a really unusual accident that just happened with his luggage, and the bruising was just slow to, the swelling was slow to move out of the finger. So, you know, because it's such a fine motor skill that command is everything, it's not something that you can expedite. The power is still there. The strength is still there. He did throw the last 3 days. I would expect him to be on a mound within hours, you know, not multiple days. We're talking 1 or 2 days. So, you know, feeling much better about his progress, but it was a little bit slower than we expected.
Ross, a month from today, Roberto Osuna is eligible to come back for you on August 4th. His suspension is over. And you made some comments a few days ago about, you know, he's our closer. And you said, we're running a baseball team. Our goal is to win championships, and he can be part of that. There's been some blowback on that. Do you understand why that would be? And just explain to us what your position is on him.
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course, I understand that. It's a very, very difficult situation that we don't take lightly. And, you know, as I think in addition said to that, you know, empathy is a great part of where our focus and energy is for everyone involved. There's a lot that still has to occur in this investigation, and ultimately that's not our area of expertise. Feel very fortunate that Major League Baseball has taken the lead and feel comfortable with the discipline that has occurred, which was significant. And, you know, ultimately, we'll let the investigation continue and run that process. But as it relates to the baseball team, when his suspension is over, he will be in a position to pitch for the Toronto Blue Jays again.
Even if he's due in court in a few days, even if his court case is still pending, he would pitch for you?
Yes, I mean, ultimately that may not be in our hands. Like, as it relates to baseball, as it relates to us, if his suspension is up and he is able to go back to work, then he'll go back to work. Now, again, like, with all due respect to the investigation, that is not up to us, and we will be supportive and follow the lead of the Toronto Police Service on that.
Are you in constant contact with him, relatively constant? I mean, where is Roberto Osuna, and how often are you talking with him?
You know, as much as I'm in touch with Troy Tulowitzki, and as much as I am in touch with players who are away from our team, he is working out in our facility, so he's in constant communication with members of our organization. He's there every day. And it's, you know, it's, I stay in touch. I talk to him, roughly every week or two. And in today's world, as you guys know, players are, or people are, using text messages a great
right.
deal. So, and text messages here and there. So, yeah, I mean, again, like, it's a very, very difficult situation for so many people involved, and a very difficult one for us. But, ultimately we control what we can.
Well, and that's the reality of such a delicate scenario. I mean, even on the radio, we've talked a little bit about it, but we don't even know all the details. I mean, there are reports out there, there could be a video, and that's where I think it gets interesting from your standpoint, Ross, and I'd be curious to get your take on this, because if there is a video, and if it comes out and it's highly incriminating, you can only imagine what the blowback's going to be within the market. And I think that's why your comments earlier in the week caught a lot of people off guard, because the court of public opinion, I'm not sure the jury's in yet. So is this a scenario that would go potentially all the way up the chain? Would ownership have to be included if it gets to a point where something drastically changes here with Roberto Osuna and the marketplace drastically changes their attitude about the whole scenario?
Well, I mean, obviously, we don't have much more information than you. Again, this is not our investigation. This is at a much higher level when it comes to investigation. So if more information does come out, we can certainly adjust.
Right. Well, we look forward to seeing what you guys have in store over the next few weeks in terms of the trade deadline.
And the Yankees coming in?
Yeah, I'll be down there on the weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing the Yankees, really. But I'll obviously be looking forward to seeing how the whole crowd sets up. And, I mean, it's you got a lot of games left, so I guess we'll see how the rest of this season plays out. Thank you for doing this, as always, Ross.
Okay, Brian and Gord, thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good day.
Ross Atkins, the GM of the Jays. Pretty much just told the GM I'm coming down to the park to see the other team play.
You did?
I did.
Yeah.
I pretty much just said, yeah, I'm coming down to see Judge and Stanton.
I don't think they care who you're coming to see play as long as you pay.
If you pass the ticket.
Turnstile, they don't care.
I paid for the ticket. I will be down there at the park on the weekend.
Do you think, just hypothetically, if Osuna is still facing charges, like he's going to apparently plead not guilty, I think he's in court Friday, so they'll set a trial date, which presumably won't be between now and August 4th. If he's facing a trial for this, are you comfortable with him pitching for the Blue Jays?
No, I'm not. I think it's important to qualify that he's still innocent until proven guilty.
Absolutely.
Very important and gets lost in a lot of these conversations. But if it's still in the court of law, nothing has been determined. So I don't see why he was off on the administrative leave this whole time because of that uncertainty. Yes. That continues.
Yeah.
Presumably, if it's still in the hands of the courts, that would still remain. So I don't know why anything would change and why all of a sudden they would be comfortable with him pitching, or why the city would be for that.
You're right about innocent until proven guilty, but when people who are public figures are charged with crimes like this, they are expected to go on, probably leave with pay, and then once it's adjudicated, then it's decided what happens to them. I don't know that, you know, the Slava Voynov thing's been talked about a lot. The LA Kings defenseman, he pled to a misdemeanor count. He pled no contest to a misdemeanor count of spousal battery. He served his time. He voluntarily deported himself. Immigration was taking him in. He voluntarily left the country. He wants to come back now. He's got a right to make a living, but no team has an obligation to sign him.
Right.
And I think the Blue Jays have an obligation to pay Osuna while he's...
Well, he's under contract, yes.
They have an obligation to pay him? I don't think they have an obligation to play him.
I don't think they do, but this is where the third party of the Players Association comes into it. And I wonder if that's kind of where Atkins is coming from in the Blue Jays, is that they have to be careful here, because a part of this, my understanding is, a part of the deal with baseball and Osuna was, take the 75 games, do not appeal. And he agreed to not appeal the 75 games, which rarely happens in baseball.
Right.
So it makes me wonder if there was kind of an agreement, like, this is it, don't fight it, take it, we're not going to add to it. And if that's kind of hanging over it, which, again, I don't necessarily blame the Blue Jays. I think they're in a very precarious position. I would blame Major League Baseball, and I'd ask them, why did you feel obligated to get out in front of this before it was resolved in the courts? And again, before this reported video comes out.
But you can't have someone playing in Major League Baseball who's about to go on trial for domestic violence. Mm-hmm. You can't. Can you?
Well,
no, you can't.
But they extended the administrative leave how many times? 6-7 times?
Right.
Why couldn't you just continue to do
that? You're right.
And then levy the suspension afterwards.
Because we're in funny territory here. And remember the Ontario Hydro employee that got fired for heckling the news reporter? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
After it, I think it was a TFC.
That was at BMO.
Yeah. He got fired and he sued and got reinstated because he said, it wasn't part of my Hydro. I wasn't wearing a Hydro Ontario shirt. He wasn't the CEO of the company. He wasn't the public face.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are held to a standard by this company. If we're arrested for something like that, we would be suspended. And then once our trial was over and we were found guilty, we would be fired.
But here's the difference.
So
I'm not a member of a union. Are you?
No.
Exactly. The union Hydro, he was a union.
Yeah, he was a union guy. But what I'm saying is, where does that standard extend? I think when you're a public figure, when you are known to the public, you're a CEO, you're a broadcast personality, you are an elected official, you're a professional athlete.
Public figure, yeah.
You are held to a higher standard.
Drunk driving.
People get picked up for drunk driving, and they serve their sentence, and they go on with their lives. We get caught for drunk driving, we probably lose our jobs.
Obviously,
as we should.
Osuna represents the team, the city, the country,
the
brand.
It says Toronto on his
shirt. Yes, without question, he's going to be treated differently. But again, I think the union part of this is an important part of it.
Sure, yeah.
Because that Toronto Hydro, he was a member of a union. And my understanding is the union really fought back and said, this is not allowed. And he wasn't reinstated. And that could be a part of this as well. But this is why I asked Ross, I'm like, are you prepared to pull a 180 here if this reported video comes out and we've got a Ray Rice scenario on our hands? Then what do you do?
Right.
And I don't know. I mean,
here's the thing we don't know. Because in Canada, when charges are pressed, they don't lay out the case like they do in the United States, right? You know,
they have not allowed anything to trickle out here.
So Voinov, we knew the next day, right? Exactly what the allegation was, exactly what the charges were, what the police report said, all that was in public. We don't know yet. And you're right, innocent until proven guilty. Absolutely. And I'm not saying that the contract should be terminated or he should be, you know.
Well, and he was being paid during the administrative leave.
And they'll continue to pay him until the trial's over. But I just don't know how. And I don't know what message are you sending. And not just to women. Because I always hear this, well, what will women think of it? You don't have to be a woman to be outraged by domestic violence. Mm. And obviously, the vast majority of it is perpetrated on women by men. And so women are very in tune to it and very sensitive to it. But men can be outraged too. And I don't understand if that's... Would you want the Leafs to sign Slava Voinov? He's a right-handed defenseman. He's been a two-time Stanley Cup champion. He would probably be cheap.
Mm-hmm. Well, not without penalty. I mean, this is a very complicated topic, the idea of second chances. And I predominantly believe in second chances. Now, I reserve the right to withhold that second chance depending on the context of the scenario.
Right. But you wouldn't hire O.J. Simpson.
Exactly. But generally speaking, I believe in second chances. But I do think Voinov, I think before it even gets to a team's the league has got to suspend him.
Well, first of all, immigration's got to...
There's got to be more of a penalty. But you're talking based on principle alone?
For the sake of argument, say immigration gives him the clearance, the league suspends him, and now he's ready to come back. Are you comfortable with him playing for the Maple Leafs?
Comfortable may not be the right word.
I'm not.
Yeah, comfortable may not be the right word. I don't think I would ever be comfortable. I don't know if I'm going to be comfortable with Roberto Osuna, but does he have the right is it more of a societal issue. And if he's got the right to work...
He has the right to work, then, but teams have the right to say, I don't want someone like that working for me.
And that's going
to
happen. I guarantee it. 20 to 25 teams for Voinov, they will say, I'm not even bringing this into my house.
We're not even looking at it.
Not even going to look at it. But someone will sign him. He will play somewhere. Because he's not the first player in league history to run into domestic violence
issues. One of the few who has run into it. He's one of the few who's perpetrated it of late.
Right.
This is not the 70s.
Very different era.
It's not the 70s.
Very different era. Kyle Dubas will join us in about 35 minutes. GM day here on Overdrive. So Ross Atkins came on. And Gord Miller's in here.
GM's here.
There you go. We got Gord Miller. We got the GM of the Jays, GM of the Maple Leafs coming up. Bruce Arthur will join us on the NBA. We got to get into this conversation. And now some reports coming out about Boogie Cousins and some of the offers that may have actually been there for him. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it next. All right, Kyle Dubas in about a half an hour. Overdrive delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. So Bruce Arthur, our buddy from the Star, will join us here in a moment. And it's starting to leak out, the Boogie Cousins stuff. We didn't get into it a lot yesterday.
No.
Obviously, he's in Golden State now. And I guess he wanted to go to the Lakers, and the Lakers decided to spend their money otherwise, bringing in Rondo, basically. But I read this morning that New Orleans offered him a 2-year, $40 million deal. So there was money on the table. Mm-hmm. There was an offer. It's a team he's familiar with. That's who he was traded to. He played in New Orleans. So this idea that nobody wanted him, no one was willing to offer him anything, you could tell at the time that was ridiculous.
Right.
But I don't blame him for taking this opportunity because of the circumstance he's in. He's coming off a torn Achilles. There's no guarantees he'll ever be the same guy again anyway. He needs time to recover, and he's going to get at least 16 playoff games to show himself off because they're going to win next year.
It's a gamble, though.
Why do you say that?
He's taking a gamble, right? I mean, you leave the money on the table because what happens if you Achilles tears in basketball or, you know.
It may forever alter his game. He may never return to form.
It's amazing in hockey how many players are able to come back from Achilles tears. Because it's rare in other sports. It's really tough in other sports.
Not, you know, jumping. There's no jumping in hockey. That's really what it
and
comes
also
down
your,
to.
And also your foot is largely immobilized, right? I mean, your ankle.
With the skate, you're saying.
Yeah.
I got it.
So Eric Carlson was talking about his Achilles tear, right? That
Well, he didn't even tear it. He ruptured it. He sliced it.
Yeah, so his was, you know, he said the skate actually helps you.
Right. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. What's happening, Bruce?
Boys, the Achilles tear is my nightmare injury. It's always been. I knew a guy who was a really good basketball player, kept himself in shape, blew his Achilles, and basically never played pickup basketball again. And that's an ordinary guy. DeMarcus Cousins, at his slimmest, was 280 pounds.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. It is definitely not a guarantee.
No, there's no guarantees. And honestly, the idea that this is what's putting Golden State over the top is also ridiculous.
They're already over the top.
They were already going to win. You know, it was already probably predetermined.
They?
Yes, they're going to win. They're already. Maybe Houston. Maybe Houston can get them.
Well, they do lose.
When? Like in the playoffs?
No, they lose the odd game once in a while. I mean, yeah. They're not Superman. They could be beaten.
Bruce, I honestly, I don't think it really is that big of a deal in terms of reading the future. They were going to win anyway, with or without Boogie Cousins.
I would put it this way. I would agree with you. I think this team, Houston made them look really uncomfortable in the conference final, made them look like they didn't know what they were doing, and Houston just lost Trevor Ariza, who's their most versatile defensive wing. So Houston just got worse. The reason that this becomes, this brings up the whole Golden State issue again, is Golden State's just completed the most dominant four-year kind of run of any team in history. And the NBA is a league. Full of dynasties and dynastic teams. They've had the highest winning percentage over 4 years of any team in history. They've won 3 out of 4 titles, and they lost the fourth one in a game 7. In the finals, the last 2 years, like getting a game off these guys is basically a championship in itself. Golden State broke the system, and they're too good. If Kevin Durant hadn't gone to Golden State, we'd have completely different conversations about the NBA, but he did. And what that does, like, so DeMarcus Cousins is coming off an Achilles tear. He's a monster talent, monster talent. He's also a guy who is a problem historically in locker rooms. Like, he's an unhappy guy. He's a problem player. But there, like, he could have gone, the LA could have said yes to the same deal, 5.3. I was told the Raptors could have said yes to this same deal and said no. Now, is that because they don't want to take the risk on DeMarcus Cousins in their locker room? And Golden State has the internal culture they think they can deal with it. Yeah, that's probably a part of it. But also, let's say DeMarcus Cousins doesn't play till January. Now, Golden State, that doesn't matter. They're barely paying attention in the regular season anyway. They're going to rest Steph Curry like 20 games next year. But if DeMarcus Cousins gets back to 75% of DeMarcus Cousins down the stretch, and they get into the playoffs, and let's say Houston does that same thing, or another team, and pushes them to the brink, you will now have a guy who can mash almost any big man in the league as an extra nuclear weapon on a team that already, I always say this about Golden State, their fourth best player holds the NBA record for points scored in a quarter. That's how good these guys are. So that's why everyone goes,
that's Klay
Golden
Thompson,
State's
right?
too good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Golden State's too good.
Yeah, but don't hate the player, hate the game. I mean,
right. So
Golden State's figured it out. They drafted and developed Steph, Draymond, and Klay. Like, yep. That's not on them. Like, it's not. Now, Kevin Durant, you know, listen, they signed the check. Every team in the league would have taken him in a heartbeat.
100%.
And it didn't really start with Durant, though. The irony here is about what's gone on over the past 3 days. LeBron was the big story, goes to LA. It started with LeBron in many ways. I mean, LeBron.
Going to Miami.
Absolutely going to Miami.
Well, but you know what, Bruce? Well, let me ask you this, Bruce. Do you think the Warriors are good or bad for basketball?
That's a good question, Gord. Like, you look at the overall ratings, look at the way their salary cap's going up year over year, basketball's booming. I would say this. So from my perspective, I've written about this. I'm not mad at Golden State. Steve Kerr's one of the best people in sports. Steph Curry's great. Draymond Green's fascinating. I don't even blame Kevin Durant. He wanted to win titles, and we, the media and fans, judge players on championship rings in basketball more than in any other sport. So guys like Steve Nash is a great example, didn't win a title, and therefore his legacy gets downgraded because he didn't win a title. Now, that's not necessarily fair. But the problem with it is, narratively, what you want is a balance between greatness and unpredictability. And Golden State, because they had a one-year money bomb hit the league, because ESPN gave them all the money in the world, and because nobody in charge, especially the union, decided to smooth that money into the system over years, they had a chance to add Durant to a team that was already a 73-win team, essentially. Like, and they returned about 68% of the minutes from that 73-win team, but with Durant instead of Harrison Barnes. It just means, I think it's bad for basketball because you get a certain number of people that go, it doesn't matter what anyone else does. And you can still enjoy the storylines and the stars and the games and that, but when it comes to who's going to win the title, there is no question. With Michael Jordan, he won six titles in six full years with Chicago. There were still questions as to whether they would win a title. There was more narrative suspense with them or with Shaq and Kobe or with the Lakers and the Celtics going back all through the modern NBA. This, again, this is a different level up of dominance. And that's where I think it's bad for the league, because imagine a league where Durant didn't leave Oklahoma City. So you have Oklahoma City with whoever they've got, and Houston, it would Warren have gone as hard after Golden State, but they went hard after Golden State and Golden State. You have a real question mark over who's going to win the title. Now, that one really key part of any sports narrative appeal isn't completely gone, but it's as close to gone as it's been in a league where dynasties are the rule rather than the exception.
With Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. So, flipping over to the East, do you believe the Raptors, now they're not going to be able to sell this blatantly. You can't just come out and put this on a platter for people. You'll get chewed up. But I could see it through the grapevine, and I think the fans are smart enough to understand this. Again, if Golden State, if it's been handed to them, they've got the title anyway. Do you think the Raptors can sell that getting to an NBA final is basically the equivalent of winning an NBA final?
I think you could. I think you could at least say it's a level of success in our organization we've never even really come close to, right? Like, it's a hard thing to do. Even in the East is so bad. Like, let's talk for a second about how bad the East is. My friend Tim Reynolds of the AP ran the numbers the other day. There's 16 all-NBA players, like, active in the league who've made first-team all-NBA. 13 are in the West. The three who are in the East are Dwayne Wade, who's 36, Joakim Noah, who's 33, and Dwight Howard, who's been released or bought out outright by two different teams, right? Like, the seven active MVPs are all in the West. So, yeah, Toronto making the final helps, and it's a better level of accomplishment. I'm not sure they're going to do it with the current core, though. Since they got knocked out, what's happened? Dwayne Casey gets fired. Now, that's LeBron breaking the Raptors and breaking open the cracks that were already there in terms of frustrations with the coach. I've been told that they're exploring or at least contemplating whether or not they can make deals to move out another core piece, whether it's Jonas Valanciunas, who I've been told that they're pushing hard on again. Maybe Kyle Lowry, that's on the table. It could happen. DeMar DeRozan could happen. Because what LeBron did was break who the Raptors were in the eyes of management to a certain degree. They just might not believe anymore. So they may not find a deal. They may run it back and try with Nick Nurse and see if they can improve on last season and beat Boston, who will be really good, and Philly, who will be really good. And that would be an accomplishment. It's still a JV accomplishment, but it'd be an accomplishment. They may also just take a little bit of a step back or just even change the mix, because LeBron busted them up so badly. And like for the Raptors, You can only play who's in front of you. You can only try to accomplish what you can accomplish. It still may be feel futile for them to try with this group, because in the moment of truth, when they had a vulnerable LeBron team, they still got swept.
How many coaches have been fired for losing a playoff series to LeBron James?
That's a good question.
It's a lot.
Mike Budenholzer held on in Atlanta for a few years till they kind of they went down. Tom Thibodeau in Chicago just drove everyone nuts. So it wasn't because of LeBron. There's been turnover because of lack of success. This is probably the only one where I could point to it and say LeBron did that. That's probably because LeBron did do it. The Masai confronted the coaching staff after game three when LeBron hit the running shot. Yeah. He was really angry they didn't double. The long simmering kind of frustrations with the staff were busted open by LeBron. I don't know if another team in the East, there have been coaches fired because the East has a lot of bad teams going up and down, but I don't think there's been any that were this specifically fired by LeBron.
Well, and LeBron also factors into the overall predictability of the league. I mean, the guy had been in the NBA Finals 8 years in a row. and mm-hmm. was not quite as predictable as Golden State doing what they've done the past 4 years, but pretty damn close. And that's why, you know, in a way, I kind of feel for Nick Nurse, because he's rolling in here, and it's like, well, LeBron's out of the way. You better win now. And this is also why I think the predictability of the greatness of LeBron in the East, the greatness of Golden State, is not a great thing for the league. And the Raptors are the perfect example. This team had been a doormat in their own market for a long time, and self-inflicted wounds, mm-hmm. run poorly, poor operations, hiring the wrong people, firing the wrong people, drafting, trading, signing the wrong people. They have put forth 5 years that has a historic run. 59 wins a year ago. This is the Raptors we're talking mm-hmm. about here. 59 wins. Maple Leaf Garden, Sky Dome playing Raptors. 59 wins. And we're sitting here like, well, whatever. Who cares? Can't beat LeBron, can't beat Golden State. That's a problem.
Well, and the thing is, though, Hayes, this was the year when they should have been able to make LeBron very uncomfortable. Indiana did it. Boston did it without two all-stars who could have been in the rotation. Like, that game won. I remember sitting there in the second quarter and turning to Dave Fastrack, who was sitting next to me, and I go, and we both agreed, they should have been up by 25. They blew game one, and that was the end of the Raptors. It was the end of this team believing truly in itself that they could beat LeBron. Now LeBron's left. Maybe that changes everything. Maybe they can beat Boston or Philly. They've always played them pretty well. But Nick Nurse is now walking into a situation where, one, you're being measured against Dwayne Casey, who's the coach of the year, won 59 games, and everybody in the town loves. And it's possible that between now and the start of the season, you'll lose a core piece because Masai Ujiri decided to shake up your team. Maybe more than one. It's mm-hmm. not impossible. So Nick Nurse, man, he's a smart guy who really knows basketball. This is not going to be the easiest job in the world.
No, it won't be. Always appreciate you doing this for us. Thank you, Bruce.
Hey, it's Gord. See you guys.
There he is, Bruce Arthur from the Toronto Star. Just got word that Jamie Noodles McLennan will join us in studio around 6:30.
What?
That's right.
Is it a sighting?
Big news. Noodles will be in the building, and I believe he will be popping in. Hot takes galore. See what he's got on his mind. Because, you know, in the hockey world, I think he's coming in doing That's Hockey. We're waiting for Carlson, basically. Right, we're waiting for Erik Karlsson to be traded, which I guess could happen at any second.
Yeah, but I think it'll happen before the end of the month.
I don't think he's showing up at training camp in Ottawa next year. I can't picture that. Which means you got to trade him at some point in the next couple of months. Yeah. You've gone this far down the road, the whole contract spiel, and we offered him something that seemed very staged to me. Anyway, Noodles coming up. Kyle Dubas will join us in about 20 minutes on landing the big fish in Tavares. What else is on their wish list this upcoming summer? Get into a number of things with Kyle Dubas. Gord Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Kyle Dubas will join us in about 10 minutes. Get his take on what the pitch was to John Tavares, the reaction to Tavares. Can't imagine he takes into account the way the fans are going to react, but this reaction has not caught me by surprise at all.
No, of course not.
People are ecstatic that they finally got the superstar, who could be from anywhere, could be from anywhere in the world. If you land a superstar, you're happy, you're ecstatic, you're excited for the upcoming season. But it means so much more that he's from Toronto.
Yeah, for sure.
It means so much more.
And he's a great player. I mean, you've added a dynamic player who's been that. I mean, if you've watched hockey in Southern Ontario for the last 15 years, you know about John Tavares when he was 14.
Well, we had Zach Hyman
player
in.
Status, the whole bit.
We had Hyman in here in the previous hour, and Hyman is 2 years younger. And the way the GTHL works is it games are based on, let's say it's a Friday night at Chesswood. It would be novice, Adam, Pee-wee, Bantam. So he would have been kicking around the rink and playing right before Tavares. You'd know about it.
Sure.
And I grew up playing in the MTHL and the GTHL, and you knew about all these guys that were older than you. And sometimes, if you're lucky enough, you'd stick around and watch them play a period or whatever. Usually your parents would be like, let's get the hell out of here. It's a school night. And you'd hear about it both ways. Sometimes you'd show up for your game, and you'd be like, yeah, there's some kid playing here that's Pee-wee. He's unbelievable. And that's the beauty of that league, the GTHL. And Tavares would have been at the top of that list.
Yeah, for sure.
Growing up.
Yeah, you know, and I've said before, the only thing that tempers it is you got to pay him, and you got to figure out how to do that.
And we'll ask Kyle about that.
That's part of the whole deal. Can I ask you a question, by the way, before we go? Why are the Blue Jays playing at home on July the 4th?
I don't know.
They're the only Canadian team. Like the Mets, the Mets must be sitting here saying, why are we playing in Canada on July the 4th?
It's a good point. I don't know. Because they didn't have a game on May 2 for, I believe, which was a civic holiday. And they didn't have a game here when you would think they would. And now they're up here at home July 4th.
They were home last weekend. They're,
complicated stuff.
This seems funny to me.
Kyle Dubas coming up. And Noodles will join us in studios as well around 6:30. So we'll get Noodles in here. We haven't seen him in like 4 days. So he'll join us as well. Gordon Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.